On today's programme, as world leaders gather in Egypt for COP27, meteorologist Gerald Fleming on why we need to brace ourselves here for more major floods. Is our overseas aids budget adequate? Trokra's Paul Healy brings us an eyewitness account of the tragedy of famine unfolding in Somalia. Access denied, why are the Milne twins still waiting for school places? And as half of Twitter's Irish staff face the sack, is the tech bubble about to burst? Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. If you'd like to get involved in today's debate, do get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie, or you can tweet to @SaturdayRTE. Now, Met Éireann has issued a weather advisory warning that further rainfall this weekend and next week will result in more localised flooding. Meanwhile, the recovery operation in Goree, County Wexford, continues after torrential downpours there earlier in the week resulted in road closures and in damage to a number of houses and businesses in the town. Wexford has been very badly hit with a number of major weather incidents in the last few months. Margaret Campbell runs a toy shop in New Ross. The shop flooded for the first time ever last August, and she's been recalling what happened.
It was an unprecedented amount of rain that fell so quickly. This flooding came in through our back door. New Ross, of course, is on a hill, so while there was a gully outside the back door to take water, rainwater, there was nothing going to take the amount of water that fell that day. It was a real freak thing. I mean, historically, there had been flooding from the river, but we were never affected by that. But then, you know, if something happens once, you're that little bit nervous in case it might happen again.
Well, you know, when you hear those flood warnings that are in operation at the moment for this week, it must put the heart crossways on you, does
it? Absolutely. You wake up at night listening to the rain and wondering, my God, is this going to come in? Or, you know, the Christmas stock starts coming in from August and you don't always have things up on shelves, so you don't always have enough shelves. So we had boxes stacked on floors, the whole showroom and store upstairs flooded. All the carpet tiles had to be taken up. And well, our insurance company got people in to dry out the building because it was just so wet and smelly and damp.
And you obviously have insurance now, but would you be concerned that that might become an issue?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is what happens, isn't it? You get one claim in, your premiums go up, they might not cover you for flood damage again. You know, I know at the time it happened, Dara O'Brien happened to be down and told us all we would be looked after. And then the following day, two members of the council came in to say, well, if you have insurance covered, you have to go that way rather than claiming through the Red Cross Relief Fund. So we had to go through our insurance company. It's been a nightmare, but anyway, we're still here.
And that was Margaret Campbell speaking to me earlier from her toy shop in New Ross. I'm joined now by former head of forecasting of Met Éireann and now consultant meteorologist Gerald Fleming. Gerald, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Katie.
You're a Wexford man yourself. And
indeed.
Listening there to Margaret Campbell, is she right to be worried about more floods in the future?
Certainly, in the overall sense, we will see more instances of heavy rain, of the very intense rain like we had in Goree there a couple of nights ago. In her situation, she was particularly unlucky, for the New Ross flooding was one of these kind of one-off things where you get a very, very heavy shower type. Those things happen, and they could happen. They happen, say, it was the sort of event that gave rise to flooding in Dundrum and Harrow's Cross there 7 or 8 years ago, which you may remember. They happen, but there's no particular reason why it should happen over her again, but they will be more frequent. So in a general sense, yes, but it's not like people who live close to a river where flooding is getting much more regular and much more frequent.
But I suppose listening to Margaret there, you think about what infrastructure is in place in places like New Ross and all around the country. Like, do we have the infrastructure in place to deal with this level of rainfall?
The answer is no, we don't have the infrastructure to deal with the extremes which we're now increasingly beginning to see. Now, we've always had flooding events and we've always had intense rain, but the difficulty with our changing climate is that we're seeing more and more of that, which means that we see more heavy rain, because there's a very clear relationship between the temperature of the rain and the temperature of the air, I should say, and the amount of water it can hold. And this is why in the tropical countries that the rainfall is so much more intense. Now, we're not becoming tropical, but the increases in temperatures that we've seen in Europe and even in Ireland are enough to have increased the capacity of the air to hold water, and therefore the incidences of heavy rain when that water does begin to fall back out of the sky.
Now, I know you've been watching, obviously, the weather and climate trends for many years. Is this where we are now? Is this where you had expected we would be? Or are the changes worse or fiercer or more frequent than you might have expected?
They're coming more quickly than we would have anticipated, looking at the projections. And we saw that report there a couple of days back that temperatures in Europe are rising at something like double the global rate. Climate change doesn't affect every part of the country, in every part of the world, I should say, in exactly the same way. So there are regional differences, and some places are feeling the worst effects and other places maybe not feeling it so badly. Seems like Europe is one of those areas that are feeling the effects rather worse than other places. In Ireland, because of our climate, because we have a fairly moderate climate, you know, the changes won't be as extreme as they might be, say, in southern Spain or in southern Italy, but they are still very considerable, and in particular in terms of the rainfall intensities that we might expect. And also, unfortunately, the opposite side of that, the drought incidences that we might come to expect over the coming summers.
And I know you work now with projects for the World Bank and other international organisations, Gerald. Mm. I mean, I know this is devastating, obviously, for people with businesses here or even households dealing with flooding. But it really is in the halfpenny place compared to what's happening in other regions in the world. I'm thinking about Pakistan in particular in recent weeks.
Absolutely. Pakistan saw very, very high temperatures back in April, May, and then a third of the country underwater there a couple of months ago. A country I work a good bit in is Bangladesh, which has major river systems coming down through it from the Himalayas and so on. You know, it's a country which is very, very susceptible to high levels of flooding. And, of course, the coastal area there is also very low. So people living along the coast trying to scratch a living through agriculture or fishing, very vulnerable to tropical cyclones coming up through the Bay of Bengal, which historically have caused many, many deaths in the past. So countries like that are so much more vulnerable, and the people living there are so much closer to the edge in terms of survivability than we are in this country, that it's really hard to compare. Yes, we will have impacts here, but the impacts in these other countries in those more vulnerable places will be so much more.
Okay. Gerald Fleming, many thanks for that. And let me introduce you now to my guests today. We have Josepha Madigan, Minister of State with responsibility for special education and inclusion, and Fine Gael TD for Dublin Rathdown, Independent Senator Alice Mary Higgins, and in our Athlone studio we have Dennis Nocton, Independent TD for Roscommon Galway. Minister Madigan, if I can come to you first, just listening to Gerald Fleming there, like, there are parts of the country here very vulnerable now, and indeed parts of Dublin, major parts of Dublin, we know, very vulnerable with rising sea levels and these major flood events. Like, doing the patch job that we have done with flood defences around the country, like, is that going to cut it long term when, as you heard Gerald saying there, we have infrastructure that was built for a different climate?
Yeah, well, first of all, just to say my sympathies to Margaret, it's not nice to go through that in New Ross either. And I've heard what Gerard said as well. And, you know, one of the things that we need to do is look at this long term. And we have a climate change sectoral adaptation plan for flood risk management, which is really critical that we have that. We've also put $1.3 billion into the National Development Plan specifically to cater for flood risk management. And obviously we get advices, or the government gets advices from the flood risk management assessment and management board, which gives us information in relation to that. There's about 51 flood schemes that have already been completed. That'll help about 11,900 houses or properties. And that's actually going to save potential losses of up to $1.9 billion. And we also have another about 90,000 flood risk schemes that are at the design, construction phase.
90,000?
Sorry, 90 flood risk schemes that are at the design and planning and construction stages. And that will help a further 2,000 homes. But just specifically in relation to New Ross, I think, and I'm not sure if Margaret has done this already, there are 750,000 from the OPW going into local authorities, the 31 local authorities around the country, for minor mitigation and coastal protection. There are schemes, there's about 683 projects already. So that should help her in relation to that.
But we'll get to the point. I mean, you know, and as I say, we're rolling out more flood schemes again and again. But will it get to the point where we'll just have to tell some people, we can't afford to protect you anymore? If you're in a flood-prone area, you're going to have to move.
No, because the funding is there, as I said, the 1.3 billion under the National Development Plan.
But is this a bottomless well of funding to protect us against something that's just getting worse and worse?
Yeah, I mean, I think climate change, and I know we're going to discuss that in more detail later, is universal. It is affecting Ireland as it is other countries. You mentioned there Pakistan and other countries around the world. So, I mean, we're very conscious of that. And we have our climate action, you know, action plan. We have our strategic priorities that are set out. And it's enshrined now under legislation after we declared a climate emergency in the Dáil in May 2019.
Alice Mary, just to that point, I mean, are we fighting a battle that we can't win here in terms of, you know, protecting people from this?
Well, I think, first of all, we haven't actually been fighting climate change. We've been talking about it for a long time, but, you know, we haven't stepped up in terms of, you know, we finally now have figures, but those figures still aren't our fair share. And I know we're going to talk about climate change a little bit more in detail, but this shows how seriously we need to be acting, and we shouldn't be having to wait for it to affect us in Ireland to do that. But yeah, on practical levels, there's things that are out of, it's not just our infrastructure, it's also some of our laws. So, you know, there's been calls for the Arterial Drainage Act to be reviewed, to look at that. I think there's been a systematic undervaluing of nature in what it does for us. So floodplains, we saw the periods of time when floodplains were getting rezoned that shouldn't have got zoned for building. We also have seen, you know, really poor policies sometimes in how, you know, a very short band-aid approach from the OPW or the concretisation of rivers, which we know, you know, I think there was examples where, you know, the environmental assessment was done afterwards, after you'd removed the trees. But if we look to something, and this is something that's been tracked across Europe, you know, during the recent heat waves, the cities that had trees were a couple of degrees lower during, when it comes to flooding, trees and those kind of nature-based solutions. So we need to think very differently about how we plan our land use. And that's, you know, that's part of it. But also, you know, we need to be more serious. Just a small thing. We saw the articles about the flooding and the, and, you know, I know a lot of people in Wexford, and I feel for this flooding in Wexford. But another smaller article in the papers today was around how plants that we've had in Ireland, you know, indigenous plants, are blooming at the wrong time of year, how it's throwing pollinators off. So the impacts of climate change are not just these increasing emergency flooding, but we're also seeing system breakdown in some of our biodiversity systems that our horticulture depends on, for example.
OK, I want to bring in Dennis Nocton now in our Sligo studio. Dennis Nocton, you were obviously a former Minister for Climate Action and Environment. Like, do you think now that there is an acceptance out there by people in general, as well as, you know, all your colleagues in the Dáil, that these weather events and actions like Alice Mary was talking there in relation to biodiversity, that these are happening because of man-made climate change? Like, because you do still hear people saying, you know, it's weather, it's not climate.
Well, more importantly, I'm a TD for the constituency of Roscommon Galway, right on the banks of the River Shannon. So I've seen firsthand in terms of the, you know, 100 year floods that we had in 2010, 2011, back in 2016, 15, 16 as well, in terms of the devastation that was caused right across the Midland counties. And sadly, at the moment, we're watching roads go under floodwaters as we speak here in this area at the moment. And hopefully it doesn't get to a situation later this winter where homes are flooded. In fact, just over the road here from the studio in Athlone, we have at least four families in the area of Loch Funchina, just outside the town of Athlone, where they're presently relying on a clay embankment to hold back Loch Funchina from flooding their homes. Homes that have been established there for generations. And these families didn't build homes on floodplains. These are there, as I say, for generations, and now are being flooded, under the threat of flooding.
Sorry, Dennis, but I mean, are people linking these events and these situations to climate change, is what I'm asking?
Yes, they are. And in fairness, when we kicked off the National Dialogue on Climate Action, the first place we came to at the time was to the town of Athlone and brought the communities that were impacted by flooding in. And they seen firsthand the devastation. They can relate that directly to climate change. And there's two aspects to this. One is climate change and mitigation to try and reduce the potential impact on our climate. But secondly, is the whole area of adaptation in terms of measures that we can take today. And both Alice Mary and Minister Madigan referenced those. But like, clearly there is a problem, and Alice Mary identified that there is a weakness in the legislation at the moment. We have the situation in Lochfunchina where the chief executive of Roscommon County Council wrote to the Office of Public Works, outlined weaknesses in the law at the moment that needed to be changed. They have been accepted by Minister Patrick O'Donovan. He has written to the relevant minister, Minister Dara O'Brien in the Department of Housing. And he has now got, or I've got a response back in the Dáil from Minister Noonan, who is responsible for heritage in that department, saying that they're not going to change the law. So what we need here is
why
a cross...
What was the reason given for that?
He said there is no need to change the law. So you have one arm of the state saying the law needs to be changed based on advice from the engineers on the ground, articulating the concerns of a local community. And you have another arm of the state saying there is no need to change the law. And the point I put to the Taoiseach 2 weeks on the floor, 2 weeks ago on the floor of the Dáil, was that we needed a cross-departmental, cross-agency task force specifically to deal with this issue of adaptation, to deal with the blockages that are there and ensure that flood works that can make a real difference, that take into account the suggestions that Alice Mary has spoken about, can actually be implemented across this country.
And just to be clear, and very briefly, if you don't mind, what law in particular are we talking about? Like, what does not introducing this law mean?
Well, there are a number, there was five different areas of law that the chief executive has identified in terms of existing powers that local authorities have to carry out emergency works, existing legislation in terms of habitats directives, in terms of protecting local communities, where there needs to be alterations to those laws to allow for flood schemes to go ahead, to actually protect homes, protect communities, and to protect biodiversity and our environment.
Okay. Alice Mary, you're trying to jump in.
Just to say, I think I agree that we need to be revising our laws. I think we may end up having some disagreements about how they get revised, because I think one thing is framing things as emergencies, which we should have planned for and we can plan for better, is you know, we need to make sure we're not bypassing the kind of thinking it through in an environmental way, thinking it through in terms of flooding potential. Which, so I think actually, as long as that means better planning and not skipping planning.
Yeah, I just want to say, just I know Dennis Nocton saying there that he thinks people do now accept that this is, these floods and these events, weather events, are come from climate change. A text in here saying, stop with the climate change nonsense. The weather is always changing. There are larger cycles at work. It's another agenda at work. Minister.
No. Yeah, I mean, I think there is. I think we all know climate change is the biggest threat globally, not just in Ireland. I mean, Frank Timmermans, who's the president of the EU Green Deal, has effectively said that this is the make or break decade. We have to deal with this. There is, by the way, a national adaptation framework that's in place. And even though there are no financial penalties, there are obligations that remain. And, you know, they're justiciable under the courts if people don't conform with those. And ministers have to give account to ROCTAS committees as well. And if they're not in compliance, they could be corrective.
This is under the Climate Action Plan. That's
under the minister. Minister, I was the one that brought in the adaptation framework. I know.
Yeah, you
exactly
did a lot of good work on that, Dennis.
The aspect of that. But what I'm talking about here, and just to respond back to both the person that sent in the comment and Alice Mary, what I'm talking about here are homes where the houses and the sites have been passed down from generation to generation. We're talking about 4 and 5 generations of the one family have lived in that location for the last couple of 100 years. They did not build houses on floodplains. These are established communities that have been there historically, okay, who are now under threat and are relying on an earthen embankment to remain in place, or their homes are going to be washed away. That's an emergency and it needs to be dealt with.
Okay. You know, I just want to move this on to talk about the wider issues around climate change, because, of course, we're at the eve of COP27. It's opening in Egypt tomorrow. And we know climate experts, heads of state, corporate giants are all coming together there to discuss climate change and weather and how the planet can be saved from the chaos that we're already seeing, and that will worsen unless we know drastic action is taken immediately. just in relation to that, Minister, what is Ireland bringing? I know the Taoiseach is going to COP27. Like, what are we bringing to the table? What will we be telling them? Because, you know, we don't have a great record here when it comes to climate change. We are failing.
Well, I mean, I think it's true to say that Ireland has been the second largest source of greenhouse gases per capita in the EU. Having said that, I know that greenhouse gas emissions across the EU between 1990 and 2020 reduced by 30%, although I understand now it's come back to pre-pandemic levels. I mean, what we're bringing to the table effectively is we have one of the most ambitious climate action plans that is in existence. I think only Denmark is trying to reach the same reduction in greenhouse gases that we are. We need to bring it and reduce it to below 1.5% in order to achieve
a net zero
carbon economy by 2050. So we have that target and we agree with the Glasgow pact, climate pact, so that there should be ambitious climate action strategies by all countries, not just by Ireland. And we're also committed to...
Do you believe, Minister, sorry to cut across here, but do you believe we have any hope of meeting those targets?
What actually encouraged me this week was when I saw, like, when we're talking about a commitment to 80% renewables by 2030, if you look at the fact that the wind energy that we received, 47% of all energy was received in October by wind energy. That's a third annually. So, I mean, there's great hope there.
You're just pointing out the one success part.
But it is a success. But the reality is, as I said earlier, there is legislation there. There are commitments there. It's on a statutory footing since 2015. The 2021 Act then came in. We have no option but to do this. Like, we're bringing in the electrification of public, you know, vehicles. There's an awful lot we're doing in terms of retrofitting. 500,000 homes by 2030. 30,000 social homes retrofitted. We have the active travel plan in terms of putting 1 million per day as well into cycling and walking infrastructure. Okay. So it is, I mean, Dennis was right, and he's done a huge amount of work in this area when he was minister. It is about this cross-departmental approach as well, and that cohesion.
Alice Mary.
Yeah, no,
so we're doing the divil and all there, according to the minister.
Yeah, well, first of all, just to say, in terms of vulnerable communities, absolutely, vulnerable communities need to be central. And that's when I'm talking, you know, about better planning. It's not a criticism of families and existence. They've been there for ages. It's a matter of what's happening around Ireland. And sometimes, unfortunately, the government have had a thing of saying, yes, we want to act on climate, but we want to ensure profitability. And there's going to be choices coming between, you know, survivability, I think was the phrase used by Gerard Fleming, and profitability.
Sustainability, yeah.
Well, sustainability is one thing. Survivability, which we're now talking about in much of the world, that's what, you know, the head of the UN is talking about, survivability, and sometimes profitability is going to have to go. And of course, we need to be looking to how do our rural communities survive, but also how do those across the world survive? So just really quickly on that mitigation, and, you know, Ireland is not a world leader. Ireland is catching up. We are miles, miles behind other countries in terms of emissions. So yes, finally now we have targets, but let's be clear, we haven't met any of them yet. And just on that, yes, we've 47% coming through on renewables, but we're also one of the only countries with an increased demand for electricity happening compared to other countries. So we are not doing our fair share on emission reduction. And we are also really crucially not doing our fair share in terms of the climate funding for those in the world most affected who've done least to cause this price.
Well, we're actually doubling the funding to the Green Climate Fund by 2025, which does help small countries and small island communities. So that's going to be 225
million.
We're
going to come to that.
We're going to come back to that
after the break. I just wanted, before I go to that break, Dennis Nocton, as a former minister for environment and climate action, like, what are you up against in terms of pushing policies that are going to be challenging for industry, for agriculture? Like, the lobbying is fierce in this area, is it not?
Yeah, look, this is a hugely frustrating area. And I think, look, the climate bill or climate act that we have now will hopefully give the minister the day, the teeth that he needs. But remember that when Minister Madigan and myself were in cabinet, we published the Project Ireland 2040 back in January of 2018, which set out a very detailed investment plan for Ireland. And the difficulty is, instead of actually implementing that plan, we went and designed two further climate action plans and haven't delivered on the implementation. I'll give you one very practical example of that. That plan set out to retrofit 45,000 homes a year from 2021 on. And I remember at the time the environmentalists criticising me that it wasn't ambitious enough. This year, the target for retrofitting homes is 22,000 homes, which won't be met. And next year, it's 37,000 homes. So in 2 years alone, we're missing that target that was established in 2018 by one third.
Dennis, would you respond to the question I asked, though, in terms of the lobbying that you're up against?
Yes, look, absolutely. There is lobbying there. But the big difficulty is that we have yet to put implementation plans in place to actually meet the targets that we have now set ourselves.
But and is that not partly because of lobbying and because you're afraid that there's a fear from various interests such as agriculture?
We haven't even got that far yet. What we do need to see is very detailed plans. And like one of the frustrating things that we've seen up to now is that people are not being given the tools to actually implement climate change. For example, yesterday on the street, I had a constituent came up to me. He wants to put solar panels on the top of his business. He can't draw down the grant because he wants to put extra panels up and he won't get the grant if he puts extra panels up. So people are actually being impeded by false barriers that are being put up today.
Okay.
We have a situation in terms of microgeneration where there's only one electricity company actually paying people for generating their solar panel electricity, even though they're legally obliged to do so for the last 14 months.
Okay, Dennis Nocton, we're going to have to leave. We're just up against the clock. We'll be talking about climate change in the Global South after this.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we've been talking about flooding here and the disruption caused by it and the cost of repairs. But there are huge swathes of the world now where climate change is causing suffering and death on an absolutely terrifying scale. Before coming on air, I spoke to Paul Healy, who is Stroker's country director for Somalia, and he outlined for me in very stark detail how bad things are in that country right now.
Sadly, this is the fifth consecutive failed rainy season. So during a season when you're expecting to have predictable rains, there are very sporadic or little rains, which means huge extreme drought for the whole of the area. And it's played out all over Somalia and, in fact, many parts of East Africa.
And this is having a devastating effect, obviously, on everyone, but particularly on women and children.
What we've been seeing for many months now, Katie, is like hundreds of thousands, most 80% of the internally displaced people in Somalia are women and children. Some of the men have stayed behind in their farms to try and save whatever they have left, but everything is gone. So all the crops with the drought have died. All their animals are dead. This is very clearly the consequences of climate change. There's no other reason. 25 years ago, when I came to Africa, there was a predictability about the rains and farmers and pastoral communities could plant or take care of their herds. But now that's gone. So you have huge issues around malnutrition of children in particular, loss of species, loss of animals, major health risks, breakouts of measles and with dirty water because there's no water being replenished. You've got a lot of diseases. So poverty, displacement, and God knows what the future is going to look like.
And when you say displacement, where are these people ultimately going to end up?
So they're coming largely from rural parts, but they're ending up in peri-urban internally displaced camps, tiny little huts, Katie, that you wouldn't swing a cat in. And they're ending up on the edges of the major towns, places like Dullo, where humanitarian agencies like Throker are working and trying to support them with health and water and food and nutrition. And so they're literally left with nothing. And unfortunately and sadly, this is not going to be reversed unless there's a massive intervention and an ongoing intervention to support such communities.
But presumably then, I mean, they won't stay there. They will move on. And I mean, can we expect to see movements of people from places like East Africa into Europe and here.
Well, yes, I mean, where else are they going to go? They're literally, their livelihoods have gone. They've nothing left. Yes, you're going to see the impacts of that potentially with migration. I think a greater solution would be simply to support communities to adapt, to compensate countries who have had no role in carbon emissions. So there has to be a global solution. You can't leave millions of people on the edge of starvation and think that the world is okay. It's just not acceptable.
I just wonder, Paul, when you come home and you see debates raging about whether or not we need to have a meat-free Monday, like, you must feel that there's a massive disconnect here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm from Dublin. I grew up in Dublin. I love Dublin. I love Ireland. But I think we have to kind of shape up and become aware that we are part of a global community. We simply cannot ignore the hunger, the deprivation and the poverty that climate change is having on millions and millions of people, over 200 million people in East Africa alone. There has to be a better solution. And I think the Irish community can accept and can adapt. I think media has a huge role. Organizations like Trokra have a huge role. The government has a major role to play. They have to step up with support for public awareness in Ireland and also to commit to the 0.7% that they've committed for overseas development assistance in developing nations.
And that was Paul Healy speaking to me there from Somalia, reminding us of the very tragic reality of the consequences of climate change for millions of people today. And we've got a text in from Graham and from Fermoy. Climate change will result in the movement of millions of people fleeing famine, drought, rising sea levels and natural disasters. Where is our national plan to cater for people in desperate need? A volume of people who will dwarf the numbers fleeing Ukraine. Minister, Paul Healy saying there very clearly, the government has a huge role to play in this. And on the most basic level, where is our commitment to that 0.7% of GNI for overseas development aid?
Well, first of all, I think it's a very stark picture, as you say, that Paul outlined, it's heartbreaking to hear it. And he also said that we're part of a global community. I think the pandemic proved that above all. I know that Simon Coveney announced in the UN Assembly, together with Samantha Power and the USAID and UNICEF, that they're going to be giving 50 million, which is part of a global fund of 250 million. And that's over the next 3 years. And then there's also an additional 30 million that is going to be given, which will be spent by the end of this year towards food, nutrition and all of that.
It's but tiny though. But when you see the scale of what is going on, that's
one aspect. Obviously, we're absolutely resolute in terms of helping developing countries in terms of loss and damage as well.
But we're way off that target.
Well, we're committed.
We're less than half.
We're committed to international financing. I don't have the exact figure in terms of, you know, the 0.7%, but I certainly know that we're doing everything we can. And in fairness, the people of Ireland are very generous. The government has always supported in terms of Irish aid and we always punch above our weight, and I think we will continue to do that.
Alice Mary, I know that the big goal of COP27 is this establishment of a loss and damage facility, exactly what Paul was talking about there, where richer nations support the poor nations who are getting hit through no fault of their own.
I mean, and that is, you know, what we're hearing about is not just a tragedy, it's an injustice, because, you know, Africa as a whole contributes only 4% of the emissions in the world. And looking at specifically at Somalia, you know, Ireland is at basically 50 times almost, 43 or 45 times per capita the emissions of Somalia. You know, we are massively contributing. So that we need to have that in mind. Now, one thing that's really important is overseas development aid is, you know, it's important. Ireland should have hit 0.7 ages ago. We do need to hit that. But climate funding is, you know, and the UN FCC are really clear on that. That has to be separate to and additional to overseas development aid. So the overseas...
Well, we are giving the 225 million. You know, we've doubled the funding for
2025. There's a commitment to go to 225. Yeah, but just to be clear, I was in COP in Copenhagen, you know, well over a decade ago. And that's when richer countries promised 100 billion a year. They haven't met it over a decade later. Ireland is at 90 million right now. We're talking about 225.
There is a commitment to double
it. But just to say, 545 million is what Ireland's fair share of that 100 billion would be. But that is separate to loss and damage. And I was really interested to hear that there's this commitment on loss and damage, because I'd like to know, is Ireland going to declare that? Not just commitment to a... There being discussions, because when we are at the climate committee, we heard that there were going to be discussions on loss and damage. But what we need to do is what Denmark has done. Denmark has stepped up and said, crucially, that they acknowledge the historic and moral responsibility that the richer countries have, and that they will specifically give funding on loss and damage. Is that what
Minister, my understanding is that we're resolute on a making real progress on the issue of loss and damage.
But are we going to declare it? Are we?
I'm sure that will happen.
Are we going to show leadership? I think that's crucial.
I think we do.
Okay, I just need to get Dennis Nocton back in here, because I'm watching the clock. Dennis, I mean, this isn't just about altruism, because as we heard there, these people are not going to stay in East Africa. But there is going to be a massive migrant issue on our doorsteps here if we don't actually support people to be able to survive in their own homes.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why this is not just a moral issue for the government here, which has a role to play, but also for the European Union as a whole, both in terms of their historic connections with many of these countries and with the need to try and manage the issue of migration. And the best way to do that is to ensure that people can remain in their own homes and that they can remain in their own communities. And I know that Paul was talking about what's happening in the Horn of Africa and Somalia. But I was in Africa last month in Kilgali, where we were looking at work going on or needs to go on in the Sahel region, which is just south of the Sahara Desert, where there's an initiative that Simon Coveney and myself were involved in when I was minister, and that was to develop what's called the Great Green Wall concept of actually developing agriculture and green projects all along the southern border of the Sahara Desert to try and bring economic development back into those communities, provide for a barrier to the progression of the Sahara Desert. And we set aside money at that time to actually develop a number of projects along that. But the difficulty was that there was actually no mechanism or projects there that we could actually invest in. So not only do we need to put the funds in place, we need to put the mechanisms and structures in place for these projects that not just combat climate, but actually support communities, provide for that just transition, and allow for economic development in sub-Saharan Africa.
Okay. Very, very, very.
I mean, just to say that it is absolutely, we need a loss and damage facility as well as the funding. But there is very strong Indigenous ideas that are coming through. So what I think we don't want is that we just get a top down approach. And I am concerned that we've seen this week Europe funding Egypt in terms of immigration control funding, and a fund for Africa that is almost focusing on a fortress approach, when in fact we need to be really looking to not just investment, but grant and loans and debt repayment to the countries worst affected.
Okay, we have to take a break.